the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
That's right, that's right. We are going to do it right. But I want to focus on the we got the power part, because we do have the power. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are here live at Harris Stowe State University, our only Black historical college university. And we are here at the Joy and Love of Black Radio Hall of Fame. And so we are grateful to Bernie Hayes and the folks here, and the my fellow colleagues that do their thing here, including Bob Hansman, who brings you the birthday. Really, it's called the birthday bash, because he really tries to zero in on the birthdays of some of our well-known musicians. And so that's always a fun time, because it comes with history. So it's not just the music, it's the history of it. So this is me today, because I really did want to do reflections for the year. And I know most people think it's been a hot mess, particularly last month when we had the election of Donald Trump. But, you know, there's still so many opportunities for joy, for love, for empowerment, for inspiration, for victories for our communities and our people. So, you know, I just want to do some reflections for the year, look at some of the guests that I've had on this show and the impact that they've had on me, and hopefully you've had it on yourselves as well. But I can tell you that this has been a very interesting year. It's been a hell of a journey. And some people might say it is a hot mess. But as we come to the end, the optimism is that there's going to be a new year, like just like there's going to be a new day. And we have to make the most of each day. We have to make the most of each week, each month, each year. And so my suggestion is going to be to make sure you take care of yourself, your family, and your community, because it's really all about the community helping to support and heal us and to empower us. This is not a individualistic thing that's going to happen. You know, it's not Jamala Rogers that's going to make this happen. It's going to be all of us working together on one accord that's going to make something new and beautiful happen in the city and in this country. So I just want to take a look down memory lane for this year. And I was looking at some of the guests that have been on the show, and I was taken aback by three sets of guests, because what they represented is a lack of sensitivity and tolerance for citizens of this country. And I'm talking none other than some of the experiments that have gone on with citizens, U.S. citizens in this country. And so remember we had Ben Phillips on, and he talked about the spray that they did when they were kids down at Pruitt-Igoe, that they didn't understand what it was until people started getting sick. Cancer rates were high of folks who lived in the projects. And they started doing some investigation based on, I believe it was a grad student that was looking into that and started contacting them. They had no idea that their government had done experimental sprays on them. So really it was a form of chemical warfare that they were testing on U.S. citizens so that they could use them on other people, and probably, notably, people of color. So we also had David Mankawa and Kei Ochi, who are Japanese Americans with descendants who, you know, were rounded up in the Japanese internment, and whose, you know, family members were bombed. And so they had a story to tell. And then there was Tina Cordova, who's with the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium. And remember, these are the communities in Nevada that were victims and survivors of the nuclear atomic bomb testing that was also used later on other peoples. So all of these people are still suffering from the impact and the results of chemical warfare. And so listening to those stories, and not all of them had happy endings, certainly with Ben Phillips and the folks who were at Pruitt-Igoe, their story didn't end well because they wanted to sue the U.S. government. And it wasn't always just for the money. They really wanted to sue to see what they could find out about what was sprayed on them. To this day, they don't really know that because, quote, it's classified. It's under national security. So there's no way for them even to prepare the next generation in terms of what to expect. So that was truly a sad ending because that's directly related to our government and what they have decided they don't want to do in the case of those people who are suffering from whatever they sprayed on the Pruitt-Igoe folks. And those kids were outside playing like, you know, any old sunny day and didn't know what that was. In fact, I think they were told it was mosquito mist. So, I mean, it's just lies, lies, and more lies. And then when you finally find out what you have been exposed to or victimized by, then there's this whole cover up. And so that to me was very telling about this government that we have. And I think one of the dilemmas with living in the United States of America is that not only is that the government you have to appeal to for redress, for resolution of situations, be it legislatively or through the judicial system, that's the dilemma. It's because it's the same people that are creating the chaos and the systems of oppression and maintaining the status quo. So we have a dilemma here in this country. And so I think part of what we do and part of what I've done as an organizer is you have to help people understand that this is not the system that's the best system, I would say, that looks after its people, that makes sure they're safe, makes sure they're healthy. And there are other systems. There are other visions and missions of how we want this society to look. And that's really the vision I think that we have to be struggling for and working for. Because what we have now, it is not working for us. The other thing I thought about is we had who I would call stewards of Black legacy that are, you know, perpetuating institutions, perpetuating legacies of loved ones. And I think about Lois Conley over there at the Black Griot Museum, who we had on as a guest. And we also had Sister Jackson, who's the granddaughter of Dred and Harriet Scott. who's carrying on that legacy, and she's got some things going to be going on in 2025. So we'll have to have her back to talk about that stuff. And then we had Linda Nance on, who is, you know, keeping the legacy alive for Annie Malone, and she certainly talked about that. And we had her here talking about really the World's Fair of 1904, and she's just a historian, and so she really helped pull some of that stuff together, and we need to get her back on. But, you know, there's so many of our people out there doing good work, you know, mining the fields and doing what they can to protect and respect our legacy, particularly as folks of African descent. And we need to lift them up, because there's so much negativity, and some of that is by design, but not only is it by design, even the projection of it is by design. So the minute you turn on the news, you know, you get all of the shootings, killings, and if there's black folks involved, you're going to get those photos, those images. And so, you know, I know some people that don't even turn on the news anymore because it's just so negative. And we are doing much more than that. And that's why I think Voices from the Battlefield is important to this community. And you've told me that, because you get a chance to hear the stories, the victories of people, not just in St. Louis, but across this country. And so I feel very special and honored to be able to facilitate that and learning all along the way. I mean, I'm definitely learning about how to do this show, because it's more than a handful sometimes, y'all. Y'all hear me struggling. Where's the music? You know, what's happened to the mic? So I appreciate your patience. And we're going to be doing some different kinds of things in 2025, because I really want you all to be part of the conversation, and we've been trying to figure out how to do that. And at this point, I think the best way that we can do that is through live stream on my Facebook page. And so we're going to be doing some experimenting with that, so in 2025 we can bring you into some of our conversations. So that's exciting to think about that, because that's what I miss about radio. You know, sometimes it's good to have people talking about that, but you know, you got an audience out there that has questions. They may have even suggestions, or they might have gone through something, the same thing, and they got a way that they were able to triumph. And so we want to hear those stories too. So we'll be playing around with that first thing on January 8th. That's when we come back. This is the last show of 2025, because the university goes on holiday break, and it just so happens Wednesday, which is the day of this show, the next two Wednesdays will be actual holidays. One will be Christmas and the other one will be New Year's Day. So I'm going to just suggest you just, you know, chill, listen to some past radio shows that we've done, and you could do that by going to JamalaRogers.com. All the shows for the year are there. I have a top-notch webmaster who's got it all up there. Even I can download them. So, you know, they're all there to share, to listen to. And so if you think you missed something or you want to hear something again, it is all there. You know, there's been so much going on in this country and in the world. And some of the ones that come to mind right off the bat is, first of all, we had another school shooting. This one was at a Christian school in Madison, Wisconsin. And the thing that makes this one different is because it was a 15-year-old girl. And so this is a bit unusual for school shootings. But now we know school shootings are not that unusual. And in fact, they have become part of our routine consciousness. And I think that's a sad commentary. Because what happens when things happen a lot, then people become immune to it and they become tone deaf. But I've been really, you know, monitoring these school shootings. And I'm not even talking about mass shootings. I'm just talking about schools because of the concern for our babies there. But, you know, it's they've been increasing. I mean, what can I say? They're not decreasing, they're increasing. And there's been hundreds of them to date since 1999 when we had Columbine. And so why haven't we been able to figure this out so that we can stop the hemorrhaging of our kids? And why are they so damn unhappy that they have to, like, get assault weapons to take out on their teachers, their peers? Something is wrong with that picture, y'all. And the school shootings that we are experiencing in this country, they don't happen other places. So it's something about being in the U.S. that creates the conditions for school shootings. And the fact that there are children doing them, I think really we should have had some kind of national emergency task force. And I know there are people thinking about this. I've had them on the show. You heard from them. In fact, the person who was the principal of Columbine, I had on. And so there are, I would say there are entities who are struggling with that, but they are struggling with different parts of it. And they were clear, they are struggling with what happens when there's a school shooting. They are not dealing with how to prevent a school shooting, which I thought was, you know, almost antithetical, but we could actually stop school shootings or minimize that. And the fact that they keep growing in numbers and we act like it's, you know, just a part of everyday news is troubling. It ought to be troubling to all of us. So in this latest case in Madison, Wisconsin, there was one student killed. I always say two students killed because the killer, in fact, allegedly died of self-inflicted wounds. But there was also an adult that was killed. And so I don't know how that school is going to cope with the trauma that they just experienced. I know that the school shooting that we had here at Central Visual and Performing Arts, we still have not tackled that issue. And you know, I had the young people on the show and they told us what was still happening. They told us that they were still experiencing trauma. They told us that, you know, on the second anniversary, there was almost blip about the fact that, you know, there was loss of lives and the fact that young people are still being triggered by trauma. So every time there's a shooting like this, good people, the folks who've gone through a school shooting, that's a trigger for them. And they get re-traumatized each time. So what happens when they go through that? Who's around? What services, what loving arms are there waiting for them to comfort them, to say it's okay, it's all right? Even though in many cases it ain't all right. But you know, we ought to be able to say that with the understanding that we are working to make it okay. We're working to make it safe for our young people to go to school, which used to be the safest place you can go. If you were having chaos at home, going to school was the safe, comforting place. And that's not the case anymore. And I just feel incredibly sad about that. So the other thing that just happened this period is we had the overthrow of the Assad regime in Syria. Now, Syria is a place that, you know, again, when there's this stuff going on every day, year after year, people get tone deaf to it. But this has been a place where for almost three generations, the only thing they knew was civil war. That, to me, is sad. And just think about if your community was being bombed almost on a regular basis and you had to hide out as a kid and get under the bed or, you know, put your hands over your ears so that you don't hear the bombs. What life must be like. But they finally sent Assad packing. The coward ran to Russia. And so that's where he's hiding out. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him again. Where? At the inauguration of Trump, because he seems like he's calling all his dictator buddies to witness his coronation. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had the military out there in the streets of Pennsylvania, marching like Gestapo, you know, bowing down to him. But, you know, we got to deal with that. We got to deal with that. But I'm so happy that there has been a regime change. Now the anxiety is a change from what to what. Because oftentimes the change is not good. You got rid of one dictator, but it's another one coming. And I just hope the Syrian people have enough strength to really start to chart out the future that they want for that country and for their children and their children's children. But it's going to be a long, hard road because, I mean, it's like Palestine. They just about bombed all the cities, the major cities, Damascus. I mean, it really is a rebuilding. And the thing about it, if I'm thinking I read this about Syria, that Assad's people, before they left, they knew they were losing ground, particularly Damascus, which is the capital, that they just started bombing places and things, and so creating more chaos and more destruction. So that's how evil these people are. So, you know, we don't know where we'll see Assad again. He might plot to come back. We don't know, but we need to keep an eye on that. And the thing about Syria, as it is with Palestine, these governments, the Israeli government is funded by U.S. dollars, our tax dollars. That's one reason that we need to be watchful. Because this is being all done in our name with our dollars. And at some point we have to say, no, not enough is enough. We are not going to stand for this. And I know that I've heard from some of the couple of the guests on this show who specifically have a stake in Palestine and who are saying they're up in the ante going forward, particularly knowing that Trump is going to be ascending to the throne, and they are really going to go after this Israeli government. And so what that translates to me is that they're going to be relying on U.S. citizens to pressure the government, their elected officials, to stop the billions of dollars that are going to Israel. They couldn't do what they do to Palestinians if it wasn't for our money. And any image that you see now, it's pure destruction. Like I said, pure evil, because the dislocation of Palestinians, you know, the bombing of their, you know, institutions and you know, prized buildings, all of that is, you know, psychological warfare as well as military warfare. And so war is not good for human beings. It really isn't. And I think we will see what Trump is going to do. I mean, you heard from one of the Palestinians, and actually she on the show said that she couldn't in good faith vote for Kamala Harris. And so, you know, she put her stake down. But now what does that mean? Because I don't think Trump has any love for the Palestinians. So what now? And so I think, you know, they've been huddling to try to, you know, figure this out. Like, yeah, we got another dictator, but we are prepared to do something different this time around. And I just believe that when you're fighting a fight and you've been doing some things and they haven't been working, then you do need to change up your tactics. And so it seems like they're changing up their tactics to be more aggressive about stopping the flow of money to Israel. But also, I think, engaging with Israelis who now are looking at their government is to say, you know, how long is this going to go on? Because some of their money, tax money, is being used, but also some of their loved ones have been taken hostage or have been killed, and so they are weary of battle fatigue with what's been going on. So they're getting some dissension in the Israeli ranks, and we know there's a whole movement internationally that is led by Israelis that do not Jewish people who do not believe that this is the correct thing to be doing, the, you know, the annihilation of a people, particularly when you had a similar circumstance and you wanted the world to intervene on your behalf. So it just seems like a strange turn of events that at one point, you know, Jewish people were the victims of genocide, and now some of the Zionists are repeating that action with Palestinians. So I know we're going to have a lot going on in this country, but what's going on in other places is part of why we have to be involved, because our government is doing things that we don't necessarily know about. Sometimes we do. But when people start getting angry at the U.S., and I just heard about a couple in, they went to Mexico and they were murdered. And I don't know all the details, but I think we're going to start to see a lot of animosity towards Americans, particularly white Americans. And so I would say that it may not be a good time to travel to certain places right about now, you know, for vacation or any other thing, because of the way the world is so divided and hostile. So, you know, it's a lot going on. I do want to say, if you just join us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And, you know, the views on this show are not necessarily those of Black Radio Hall of Fame or Harris State University. And we're going to continue to talk about the hard issues that are going on in the world. And I think it's my duty and my privilege to try to find out who are the best voices for that, so that you're getting it from somebody who's not theorizing about it, but who actually has done some work in it, who's organized, who's felt the oppression. Bring those voices to you so that you can make your own decisions about what's going on. I think one of the things that I did want to talk about that just happened, y'all, and maybe some of you all are not surprised, but the facility on the north side that they dubbed the Homer G. Phillips Memorial Hospital has been shut down. Now, and it shut down because they weren't paying in the employees, and it's a mess over there. But we should not be surprised. Paul McKee has been malicious and insensitive and greedy about how he's progressed in the north side with the properties that he owned, the properties that he maintained so that he could collect parcels and be able to sell to the government for a fat price. And now that place over there is the National, what is it, the NGA. I've been using the acronym so long, I can't even remember what it stands for. But that's the big spy people that are in town. And they got most of what used to be Pruitt-Igoe. And so it's a huge complex. And one of the things somebody reminded me about, that all of a sudden there's interest in Metrolink going on the north side. And what I'm telling people, same thing I told you about the original Metrolink, that was not intended for us. That was intended to get white people from the downtown or from the Air Force base to the airport, to those games downtown, and into the universities, And if we happen to be able to jump on a Metrolink in between there, all's well and good. But it really wasn't for us. It wasn't designed for us. And the same thing I would say for this thing that's going to now go through, quote, Northside. That's for those people at that complex so that they can get back and forth to work safely. So, you know, they're probably going to be doing some focus groups and what do you think and that all. It's not for us, y'all. So, you know, what's happened with Paul McKee in this hospital, and we've had the change the name people on here. We've had the Homer G. Phillips Nurses Alumni Association on. And what's the difference between what I think about Paul McKee's little facility over there and what they were saying is, like, they're not opposed to the facility itself because there needs to be health care services on the north side. They were opposed to the use of Homer G. Phillips' name. And so they've trademarked the name. They went to court. I think there's going to be another court date coming up, and we definitely will keep you informed about that. But see, what I said about Paul McKee is that facility on the north side was doomed because, as our sister Maya Angelou said, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. This man has shown us he's a scumbag, and for him to build a health facility on the north side, that was not some charitable thing. That was about money, and now that thing is about to fall, and I don't know that it'll ever reopen. I just have sympathy for the poor black folks and whoever else was over there with a job thinking they were going to get paid, and now, you know, I think they haven't been paid in 2 weeks and probably won't get paid. And this is not the first time it's happened, so let's just be clear about that. But that facility, if you drive past on Jefferson, you'll see it. And it's supposed to be a 3-bed facility and with the name of Homer G. Phillips on there. So some people say, well, maybe that is, resolves the whole controversy around the name, but not necessarily. So we need to keep our eyes on that. We need to run Paul McKee's butt out of St. Louis. That's what I say. Because how is he still able to do business? He's still got derelict buildings over there on the north side. He has not done any of the things he was supposed to do. So why is he still allowed to do business here is really a question for the elected official who keep, you know, allowing him to get parcels of land, blight other places. And so we need to figure out who's doing that and ask them why. But yeah, so those are some of the things that have been going on both locally in this country and around the world that I think may look unrelated, but in some cases they are, because I think the kind of hate and white supremacy that's going on globally and finding its roots in Nazism some of these right-wing groups, they don't just exist in this country. They exist in, you know, Europe and other places, because the rising dominance of people of color is real. And so that's why one of the first things your president said he's going to do on day one is mass deportation. Now, I want you all to think about what that looks like. You got the number of people that he's talking about is in the millions, and it's going to cost a ton of money for this to happen. So how this is going to be done, I've heard different ways that they're going to do it, but it's going to be sweeps, you know, sweeps. And if you get caught up in the sweep, so bad, you know, too bad, so sad, because they're not going to be able to tell American born Chicano from one that, you know, came from Mexico. That's not what they're going to do. So they'll let you figure that out once you get to the border or once you get to Mexico. But I think he's real in doing it, and it's probably going to be some attempt made so that he looks good on his promises. But a number of these people have been working and paying taxes. I know there's this whole thing about they don't pay taxes and, you know, they get money that they don't have to claim because they do cash. That, believe me, when you're in this country, you pay taxes. Every time you go to the store, you're paying taxes. And if you got a Social Security card, you definitely are paying taxes. So, you know, this whole number, like they're getting away with, no, they're not getting away with nothing. And most of the time, they have getting paid, okay, because people know that they don't have the documentation they need. So they get exploited, super exploited. Under the threat of, you know, I'll turn you in. So it's going to be interesting, like, when we look at the role of migrant workers to do the fields of tomatoes and grapes and all those kinds of vegetables and fruits. Who's going to do that? The fields are going to be left empty. People are going to be crying about prices. And this is the thing about connecting the dots. Because also your president's saying that he's going to be doing these tariffs. So these things are going to affect not just our pocketbook. They're certainly going to affect that. But they're also going to affect the mentality and psyche of people who are going through this. So, it's going to be intriguing to watch the rollout of mass deportation on day one. And so the sad part, I think, is that for some reason he's fixated on Springfield, Ohio, which is where a lot of Haitian immigrants are. And these folks have been hardworking people. Even the community says, wait a minute, why are you targeting them? These are our neighbors. They have local businesses. They belong to our neighborhood associations. Why are you doing this? And the backlash is a lot of those Haitians are now moving out of Springfield. Where they end up, who knows? But they feel the threat, and the threat to them is real. And so they are moving out. Of course, this means families are being split up. Because some people are staying and others aren't. And I just think we need to keep our eyes on Springfield. And hopefully I can get somebody there who's witnessing all this to tell us what's going on and if there's anything we could do to let us know. So that's on my list of guests for the future, because this whole immigration thing is really about, I can't put it any other way, but, you know, ethnic cleansing. And so, when he says he, meaning 47, to make this country great again, he really is talking about a white America where men are able to do whatever they want to do when they want to do it to whoever they want to do it to. That's the American Trump is talking about. And all those buddies, those cronies that he's had appointed to his cabinet, they are like-minded. And they're so bad that some of them even have dropped out before they even go through the process, because they know their whole record stinks. And it started smelling long before they were selected as cabinet people. But, you know, we're going to have a bunch of criminals running the country. And so, what are we going to do? And it's no time to be wringing hands and pontificating. We got to get busy. We got to get to organize our people in a way that's effective and makes them safe. You know, make sure their rights are being respected and upheld. And the only way you do that is to get organized. So I'm going to tell a little bit about some of the folks that I want to see come on the show, but I really want to just do a little bit of deep dive into Project 25. We've talked about it some on the radio program, and I would say if you don't feel like you know enough about it, don't feel like you have to read the whole 900 pages of, you know, Project 2025, because that's how many pages it is. It's a very detailed plan of what the MAGA folks are going to do when Trump comes back in. So, there's people who made it digestible and they got bullet points. So you might want to look at that. But one of the interesting things I think is he's going after the labor unions that represent the federal government workforce. So those are folks like the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, that's AFSCME, American Federation of Government Employees, that's AFGE, and I would say even some of the locals like Communication Workers of America, who represent some state workers, are going to feel the heat and the brunt of Project 2025. So, I mean, he's lining up people to take their place already. They've sent out the applications, and they're going to replace something like 50,000, you know, workers. Now, how that's going to happen? You know, I'm hoping that the unions who represent them are poised to fight back and to let us know how we can assist. But, you know, these can be done by executive orders. He did it in 2018, you know, and they are not allowed to strike. So they've taken that weapon away from them that would be able to be a bargaining chip. So those government employees, it's going to be interesting to see. So first of all, you got the cabinet people who are going to be replaced by kooks, because I think about somebody like a Robert Kennedy Jr., who's full of conspiracy theories. He really doesn't believe in science. He's about to take fluoride out of the water. Then you're going to have all the MAGA folks underneath these people, like little drones carrying out, you know, their bidding. And so that definitely is going to be at our peril. So I'm thinking about something like EPA, which they've been gutting for years. You know, it hardly has any funding to do what it needs to do, as these polluters of air, water, and soil, you know, make their profits, and they want to do it unencumbered. I think about the Food and Drug Administration, which is supposed to be our watchdog to make sure, you know, these prescriptions are being tested, that stuff that's being put on the market has gone through clinical trials and is safe. So now these people are going to gut all of that so that these folks can make money as fast as they can, as much as they can, without the restrictions of laws that protect citizens. So, you know, I want us to just be watchful of this. Again, 2025 is pretty plain. They're not trying to hide what they're going to do. So we can't say, well, we didn't know. Oh, yeah, we know. We know. We know. And some of it has already been rolled out. I mean, the fact that he stacked, you know, the Supreme Court with people. So if ever he needs to go that way, they're gonna support him, you know, 100%, 120%. So some of this stuff is in place. Now, it makes me think about what the power that a president has. Now, most of the time you see him as a head, and it's other people and other entities that are really running the government. But I'm thinking about the power that both Trump and Biden had to pardon people who have been convicted. And, you know, I know some of us were just angry when we heard that Biden, first of all, pardoned turkeys, and then the next thing he pardoned was his son. And we think about, well, whoa, 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 what about the Leonard Peltiers of the world? What about my brother Abu Jamal? What about them? And so I'm trying to find the list, because supposedly he did hundreds of pardons, but I don't know who they are. Maybe they're all his buddies, but I don't know who he asked, like, who should be pardoned. But he's got a few more days, weeks, y'all. So we got to get our list in. If I find that list, or you know, of the list, you know, please let us know, because I want to make sure some of the people that have been languishing in prison, particularly some of our political prisoners who've been in there for decades, get their just due. And Trump has already said he's pardoning everybody that was in that January 6th insurrection. So he's going to pardon all his criminal friends. And so I'm just looking at the people who got these enormously ridiculous sentences, or who've been serving time for trumped up charges. They're going to get passed over unless we make some noise. So I'm going to be looking at some of my cohorts who are in other cities, who specifically have been working around political prisoners, to see if they put together a list that maybe we can all help to push. But right now, I think it was 1,200 pardons that Biden did in one day, which was a record for a president for one day. But again, he's not out of, he's a lame duck, but he's still got the power to do that. So let's see who we can get out of jail. And it won't be free, because most of them have done their time. It's not going to be like these people with January 6th, some of them who didn't even get prosecuted, and some of them who did, and some of them had to serve a little time. They're getting ready to be pardoned. And so this is like it never happened. So this is what you do when you abuse power. You know, it has nothing to do with how do you lift up humanity. It's about how do I reward my friends for what they've done for me. So that's what makes this whole thing with Trump very, very scary. So, you know, I talked about some of the people I'd love to have on the show. What I'm doing for day one, when I come back, and that's January 8th, we're going to have Dr. Lisa back. Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick is one of our trusted messengers. She is a medical doctor and a fairly unique one, and has a unique way of letting us know how we can be healthy, because we need to be healthy going into 2025. And the first line of defense is going to be, we got to have sound health, both mentally, physically, and spiritually. And she's got some ways to do that, because part of the problem with us is that, particularly Black folks, is that our lifestyles are not conducive to healthy outcomes. And so we got to do some stuff. But we also know that all of this is in the context of making us sick, so that we have to depend on the medical industrial complex. And that doesn't bode well for us, as we found out during COVID. So there's these disparities that are inherent in the system that's not designed to keep us well. And so, again, our first line of defense is to be healthy and sane. So she's going to give us some tips about that. So she's already been confirmed. So we look forward to that. But, you know, I do want to get somebody on here that was on the Reparations Commission, because, you know, they gave the report to Mayor Jones. And so we need to see what's in there, see what the administration thinks about it, and if they are willing to fund some of the recommendations. But we're going to get somebody from that commission who worked, I know it was over a year, maybe even a year and some change, to come up with this report. And so we need to see what's in there. We need to know what's in there, and we need to know what's not going to be supported, because reparations is a real thing, and it's coming, manifesting itself in different forms. Some people are going after institutions. Some people are going after corporations. And some people are saying, no, this is the U.S. government that's, you know, responsible for the enslavement of Black folks and the trauma that came from that over you know, several generations. So that, to me, is interesting as to where we are with reparations right now. Different cities are doing different things, and so we need to know what St. Louis is going to be doing about reparations, and hopefully they're going to be doing something about that. You know, the January is the time when I bring in the people who are going to have to interface with legislators in Jefferson City, and that's always an interesting job to have. But we need to know what things are being introduced. All of it is not going to be good stuff, but luckily we got some people, some watchdogs down there, so we want to get them on sooner than later so that they can tell us what's going to be happening, what to watch for. And most of these groups have lobby days, so we'll also be announcing that. So if you want to participate in a deeper way, you know, you can take the bus to Jeff City, meet some of these folks who are down there making laws on your behalf, laws that are going to affect your future. So you need to know who these people are. The other thing that's coming up is we got some elections coming up in the city for mayor, for some of the, I think it's the odd number wards. But I'll find out. So, you know, we need to be talking about that. Already we know that there's three people running for mayor now. Mayor Jones has said that she's going to run for re-election. Michael Butler, who is, let me get this right, I think he's recorder of deeds now. So he does have a citywide office. And then Cara Spencer, who ran last time, is running. And so there's three people, but it's still time for people to throw their hat in the ring. So we need to watch that and see if we can be informed enough to vote. That's coming up. Again, if you are just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, which with reflections of 2024 and plenty of optimism for 2025. I mean, I'm actually looking forward to it. I guess part of it is like the Organization for Black Struggle, and you heard them last week or two, is going to be hosting its 45th anniversary celebration on January 25th. And we have coming to town for the first time is Robin D.G. Kelly. And so we are so excited about that. And excited about the fact that we've been standing here for 45 years. So we are totally excited about that, just too excited. And so we hopefully you will join us in that celebration. You can join virtually. You can, you know, be in person where you can go get a nice dinner and get to interact with Robin Kelly and, you know, members of our social justice community. So that's on January 25th, Saturday at 4 p.m. And these events are all on my website, JamalaRogers.com, and any other things that are coming up, particularly since we won't be on the air for 2 weeks. I will try to get that up to our webmaster so that you can have that. But I do know that on January the 11th, I'm going to be doing a Zoom workshop. It's in person too. It's both virtual and in person, called Getting Organized to Organize. And I've done this before, and people kept saying, when are you going to do that again? When are you going to do that again? So we're going to do that January the 11th. And what this is about is looking at what are the things that are keeping you from being more involved, that's keeping you from being as involved as you want to be. And I've identified four areas that really impact people not being able to do what they want to do. And, you know, there's so many distractions that we don't have boundaries set. And so if we're going to really get a disciplined approach in 2025, you need to sign up for this. workshop, and it, you know, we'll have that information on the website. But it's basically free. Donations are welcome, but it's free because we want people to be involved. You know, there's so much chaos in our life, and that's not going to change. They create chaos so that that keeps us on this little spinning wheel. But we have to know the difference, and we have to be our own liberators. And so the way to do that is to control the things that you can. And most of the time, that's the stuff that happens in your house and the stuff that happens with your body. And so we're going to do, it's about an hour and a half, but we're going to give you some tools to do that and some practicing of these skills so that you feel confident going forward. And, you know, the other thing is that my thing for 2025 is we got to get better organized. And so find an issue that you feel passionate about, and there's many of them out there, then find your people. So find your issue, find your people, because there's somebody working on that. They're sincere. They're not doing it for money, not doing it for recognition. They're doing it because it needs to be done. They're out there, y'all. So 2025, start now. Identify your issue, join an organization, find your people, find your people. Wow. I am going to be signing off, and I'm going to be turning y'all over to Bob Hansman, who's, you know, your musical conductor for the next couple of hours. But it's been, I can't even express to you the joy of being in the seat on Wednesdays and talking to people in different places on different battlefields about what they're doing, why they're doing it, how they're doing it, and just learning so much about some of these struggles, but also about the resilience of people, about the strategy that different organizations are implementing. And we're going to have to be looking at all of that come 2025, because I don't think there's something magical about that number, but I do know that we will have a person in the White House who is a convicted criminal. That's very different, y'all. And not only is he a convicted criminal, he has told us what he plans to do, and much of it is not going to be good for us. It is not. So, you know, we have to figure out how we are going to not just survive, how we're going to thrive. We're going to have to figure out a way to take this country back. So it's going to be a tug of war. There ain't no doubt about that. It's going to be a tug of war. And my bet is going to be on the people, the rising majority. And just like the folks in Syria, it took them a while, but they said, enough is enough. We're not doing this another day. And ran that rascal right out of Damascus. So he's hiding out somewhere in Russia. And I wish them the new day, a new dawn of a brighter future. But they will have to determine what that is. And so again, I'm just honored to be in this seat and thank Bernie Hayes and the folks from Black Radio Hall of Fame for all that they are doing. And guess what, y'all? Next year, the Black Radio Hall of Fame conference is going to be in St. Louis. So you best believe we're going to be talking about that. We are going to be talking about that. So that's going to be exciting because this is the home of Black Radio Hall of Fame. And so it's We're gonna be the hostess with the mostest, and so I'm looking forward to that. So what I'm telling you is that there's plenty for us to be looking forward to in 2025, and not just, you know, the specter of Project 2025 that we're going to deal with. So I'm going to retool and think about what what I'm going to do for the 2 weeks in terms of recharging my batteries. But and I ask you to do the same. Stay well, be safe, and we will see you January 8th, Wednesday. This is Jamala Rogers. I will see you on the battlefield.